Welcome to episode 353 of the Countdown Podcast. Am I right in thinking that everyone just high speeds through the intro? I'm not sure. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness so you don't have to. And today's topic is a patron chosen one.
That's
from
right.
Adam Allure, top level patron to the show. He said, I want you to do Battle of the Toms. Tom Hardy, yep. Tommy Lee Jones, Tom Hanks. Pick the best films from those three actors and put them in a list 10. And then give us the top Tom, I think you called it.
Wayne. Yes, who wins? Who's the top Tom? And of course, you may be wondering, what about Tom Cruise?
And well, Adam, and the answer to that is Adam's like, no.
Because otherwise, I'll have a list of 10 Tom Cruise films. And you know what? You're probably right. So that's a good call to exclude T to the C. Three pretty brilliant, pretty very well-known
amazing Toms. Actors from, arguably from different generations. I guess Hanks and Lee Jones were in the close, same sort closer. Of Lee Jones is at the start of Tom Hanks, and then we've got Tom Hardy now, who's I think 44.
He's a young buck.
Much younger by comparison. It'll be very interesting to see how this sort of one shakes out. I have my favorite, Wayne. Can we say it out front?
Yeah, me too.
Who did you want to win?
Well, I know who your favorite is.
Go on.
My favorite is Tom Hanks.
My favorite is Tom Hanks as well.
What? You know I saw Tom Hanks?
What?
Yeah, I went to the fucking Tribeca Film Festival in 2016. Right?
Yep.
So I'm there, it's in New York, and everyone's like, all these celebs start pissing out. And it's fucking like John Oliver, and then motherfucking, who else? Some other folks. And then Tom Hanks just turns up, and he's like 2 feet from me. And I'm like, like a bitch, all right? And then after him, Ricky Gervais and Kevin Pollak.
Yeah.
I was like, this is the shit. So I was like,
so really peaked and fell away.
Oh, totally. But yeah, Tom Hanks is right there, man. Look at this motherfucker's here. Anyway, so yeah, that's my warm brush.
He didn't give you a fist bump?
He did not, nor did I give him, like, you know, the opportunity. He just kind of waved and, hey, and didn't even look at me, but there. He was right there.
You didn't have a microphone in your hand. Had you said, I'm from the Countdown, every time he was a
where are you going? It'd be like that.
All right, so that is it. So thank you so much to Adam. Thank you to all our patrons for their support of the show, the lifeblood of the show, if I can put it that way.
Mm.
That's it. I don't think I even have a recount. We didn't have a back and forth. If you want the big recaps actually on our review this week, The Matrix Resurrections, there's a big discussion about No Way Home and the feedback on our review, my review really, of that. So do check out that review if you've yet to do so already. I'm not sure when it will come out because it's all
all over the place here.
Loosey goosey in 2022.
God damn it.
On that note, happy fucking New Year.
That's right. We are recording this on New Year's Day.
We are, but to all of our listeners and when this drops, we hope you've had a great start to 2022. We hope it's better than 2021 and 2020 shitboxes that were combined.
That's right. It's about velocity this year, people.
Surely we're the only way is up, as Yaz would say.
Deep cuts.
All right, without any further ado, then let's go straight into it then for this big episode, The Battle of the Toms, on the other side of this music cue.
Perfect.
Which way should we go from here? Is the subject of this week's countdown.
We're just flying by the seat of our pants, people. It's New Year's Day. We don't know what the fuck's going on.
Gold.
I love these shows.
All right, Wayne, are you ready?
You want me to go?
Shall you go? So, Tommy Lee Jones, Tom Hanks, Tom Hardy.
Right.
Now, we did agree.
Yes.
No co-starring, co-star sure.
You can get an and credit.
But not yet. Not a fucking back down the line seventh of the list or, you know, like Tom Hardy apparently was a walk-on background extra in No Way Home.
I know!
You saw that too. Does not count.
And this is, exactly. It has to be at least third billing or the and credit.
Yeah, I agree. Something like that.
Yep, okay, cool. Cool. Well, no problems with my number 10 because it's Warrior.
Oh, absolutely. On my list. Yes. Great choice. I got to score this because, we should have mentioned this top of the show. Inverse scoring.
Right,
so
right.
Number 10 scores 1 point. Number 10 scores 10.
Number one
scores 10 points. So in other words, we will crown the top Tom.
After this.
At the end of this. And forevermore, we'll settle the dispute. Which is the greatest Tom actor minus Tom Cruise? We'll have to come back around. Maybe whoever wins this, we should put up against Tom Cruise.
No one's going to win, Paul. No one's going to win against Tom.
Not in your fucking world.
Oh, come on, man.
All right. Tell us about Warrior.
Okay, so check it out. Warrior is this MMA show, which you wouldn't expect. It's got Tom Hardy, Joel Edgerton, and Nick Nolte in it. And it's about a recovering alcoholic, like former wrestling coach, who's Nick Nolte. And it's actually, sorry, it's about the sons who actually are both in this MMA tournament shit. And they get trained. And it's a lot of like family type shit. But of course, at the end, they have to fight. This is probably what I would say is this is more of a movie than it has any right to be. Because it's like, it's about fucking MMA. It's really, really like, it's not like David Mamet's Red Belt where it's centered. Right? You know what I mean? It's not that kind of artsy shit. This is like MMA, motherfucker. You know what I mean? It's like new, this shit. So to have that actual angst and Nick Nolte's performance as well as this, you know, as this sort of grizzled, old, fucked up guy. And the family dynamics between the brothers and the fathers and stuff like that. Really fucking cool, man. And in the fight at the end with the two, there's a very satisfying conclusion to that fight. Sometimes they fucking bitch out like that shit. But this time, fantastic.
I have to say what really works about this film, and by the way, no!
I understand.
Is that instead of having an antagonist and a protagonist, and you want the protagonist 100% to win, you might have your favorite. You might arguably go down the line of this is the main character in the film. But both of them are worthy winners.
Yes.
Both of them are good blokes in their own way. They've both been traumatized by their parenting, as you said, from Nick Nolte's character. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely thrown with them both, and you don't want there to be a loser. Or at least I didn't by the time we got to the final bout. What a film. What an idea. Like, rather than making someone bad, how about they're just both human beings with complex, normal motivations and throw them against each other.
And have a defined result that it would actually have, this is realistic how it went. And the way that it went in this movie, the guy that I wanted to win won.
Sure.
But also, when it came down to this, like, there was a potential for the movie to bitch out and say, oh, one guy's injured. Is the other one going to take it easy on him? And that's the brotherly love thing. They didn't do that. The guy just went, fuck you, and kicked him in the head.
And you also, Tom Hardy, I think, is very good as the really sort of traumatized war vet in this film as well. And I tried to factor in their performances as well, as much as how much I love the movie, though. Really, when it comes to this, it's mostly about how good the film is that they're in.
Absolutely.
But there's not a bad role in my team.
No way. And you know what? Hardy's physicality is something to behold.
He's a beefcake.
Fucking personal trainers for his neck, just all kinds of shit. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah. All right. Great choice. It's on my list as well. My number 10, though, is from Tommy Lee Jones. This is as high as I can put it. I'm sorry. Here comes the man in black.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wait, this is on your list?
Yeah.
Bitch, please.
Sneaks in.
How?
I like this movie.
I like it too, but I'm me.
Not on your list?
Not you. No, it's not on my list. It's like an honorable mention. Wait. Wow. You're choosing Men in Black over some other Tommy Lees I'm thinking about? Oh, I suppose there could be a few up higher.
Hold on.
Okay. All right. Wait, I'm amazed, bro. You
Tommy Lee Jones, this film, and this is what got it the 10th spot, sure. Right? The coveted 10th spot.
Sure.
Is great. He is the perfect, I think, encapsulation of this older, gruffer, had enough fucking bullshit. Yes, Will Smith, you are new and you just need to get on board and just fly with the shit.
Yes.
The veteran, perfect description. Portrayal, perfect.
Absolutely. Like,
can you imagine anyone else at this particular point in his career? When was Men in Black? 1997, she was like 2000.
Yeah.
So 24 years ago. Fuck, that makes me feel old.
Bro, the whole thing about that Men in Black, because I love Barry Sonnenfeld back then. Yeah.
Great director as well, at that stage in his career.
Absolutely. And Will Smith was the cool motherfucker at the time, all right? He's since said all of the shit that I did in Men in Black is no longer cool. He says his son tells him, you know, he puts the glasses on, I make this look good, right? Gives a laugh for the audience back in the day. Kids now think that's the dumbest shit they've ever heard. He said, it's amazing, right? So that's why it was cool, because it's like, and Tommy Lee Jones, you're right. You know, Will Smith said to him, you know the music video with the fucking dancing fucking aliens and shit?
I know the one that I just referenced. Yes. My perfect.
In fact, song that you just reproduced perfectly.
Yep.
He said to Tommy Lee Jones, yo, you should dance with me on this music video. And Tommy Lee Jones apparently just took his glasses off, looked at him and said, you and I come from different worlds. That was it.
I love that.
He doesn't suffer fools.
Well, like, it's not on my list. I'm assuming Batman Forever is not on your
fuck
list.
No.
Yeah. That even the story where Jim Carrey is just talking about how much Tommy Lee Jones hated him.
Oh, really?
Just how much. He came up to him in a restaurant at some particular point, and Tommy Lee Jones just like, yeah, walked away.
Really?
Couldn't even sit with him for dinner because he just hated his ridiculous sort of vibe and energy he brought to the table. So,
oh my God, that's so harsh.
Both literally in that moment and figuratively during the filming of Batman Forever.
Jeez, I've met people like that.
Anyway, I think he's perfect in this role. I think it's a good film. Unfortunately, they did the subsequent sequel in particular to, let's say nothing about Men in Black International. I know 3 was better, but This is the film that matters for me.
Three was better. Internationals for Hawker.
Yeah, it was. Men in Black, my number 10.
Nice one. Unexpected. My number 9 is also a Tommy Lee Jones.
Early lead to the LJ.
And you know how this goes, right? You know how it goes, right? So
if they're down here, they're not higher.
That's right. So anyway, my number 9 is The Fugitive.
Yeah, The Fugitive. Honorable mention. Couldn't fit it on my list. So understandable. I end up going with Men in Black over Fugitive.
Totally. And do you remember, though, when we saw this, as me and Paul used and the boys, right, used to hang and watch movies and shit like we do now, I guess, but less so. And The Fugitive, when that came out, we would have been, I don't know what year it was, but we were sort of youngish kids.
93.
So that's what, 20 and change? We were
18.
18, bitch. All right. So we were very easily impressed. Anyway, we were looking at this Harrison Ford-ass movie. And this movie actually is like, it represents the best of a genre that I think has since faded, which is the character-driven action movie for adults. It's not a fucking, like, it's not funny. And we all marveled at Tommy Lee Jones's performance. Sure, Harrison Ford is Harrison Ford, right? But his whole thing with the pipe and the, I didn't kill my wife! I don't care! That kind of shit was real killer, man. What
a such a very outhouse, henhouse. In-house,
whatever this, that. Yeah, all that shit was real classy. And again, he would have, you know, been, you know, he's not a young man or anything, but I just bought it. And I even liked the fucking, the Wesley Snipes one. What was the future? What was
U.S. fucking.
U.S. Marshals. U.S. Marshals.
Oh, no, U.S. Marshals, you're right.
I
did not like that one.
No, I know. It was a bit shit, but I liked it for some reason. It's not on my list. It's The Fugitive that I'm putting on here. But yes, big fan of this film. Did you remember that, right?
Yeah,
you're
fine. Very excited. My number 11.
Yeah.
Number nice 11 one. On my list. And that was that and Men in Black, which one would get in here?
Yeah, I'm glad you picked Men in Black, actually. So, a nice one.
All right. My number 9 is not going to be on the list, Wayne, because you are not a fan of this film, even though I agree the end is kind of blows my mind. I don't really understand it. I still don't to this day. I've read multiple theories about it. Nothing that sits right with me. My number 9 is the Academy Award winning No Country for Old Men.
Yep. It wasn't going anywhere near my list.
I really enjoy this film, which basically follows Josh Brolin's character coming into a $2 million hoard of heroin.
Yep.
Anton Chigga, so Javier Bardem, is chasing him for this. And then Tommy Lee Jones is the sheriff who gets in the middle of it all and is trying to sort all this shit out. Great performance, great film. Yes, the last 10 to 15 minutes just makes me scratch my head, but apparently that is true to Cormac McCarthy.
Or the bit in the middle with the fucking motel, walking into the motel, and all of a sudden the threat that was in there is no longer in there. I don't know what the fuck happened with that. Remember that? Man, Anton Chigga is in the shadows in this motel room, which Tommy Lee Jones is outside of, all right? You see him there. He's in there. He's got a gun. He's going to bust a cap in whoever walks in. Tommy Lee Jones just fucking walks in, turns the light on. That motherfucker ain't there no more. I'm like, what the fuck? It was a weird scene.
I love the explanation that Anton Chigga is death. I love this concept. I think it's perfect for the film.
Then why does he need the fucking...
It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant to Tommy Lee Jones' performance. He just does the 2007, this film, is the aging sheriff slash over-the-top veteran.
Yeah, still got it though. You know, it's like he's still doing his job.
Not over-the-top, perfect. World weary. I think that's the word I'm looking for. And I think he's phenomenal in this movie. I think the film's very, very good. What did I rate it? 3.5 stars. Four stars for No Country for Old Men. Could have been one of the greatest all-time Academy Award winners, if not for the last 15 minutes. I don't understand what Tommy Lee Jones is talking about at the end of the film. One day, maybe. I hope to.
Let me ask you something. Do you find it at all that the lead character's surname is a little bit tricky?
Can't remember what it was.
Chigger. Because that's what the Asian guys and me at work call each other.
I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen.
Crazy pills.
You should see the white people's faces when they hear us. Anyway, sorry.
Moving on. What that does mean, Wayne, though, is Tommy Lee Jones taking the early lead with 5 out of a possible 6 points. I don't hold out hope for him later in this countdown.
I don't, but I tell you what, he's giving it a red hot go because my number 8 is also a Tommy Lee Jones film.
That's all LJ.
I know, right? My number 8 is Captain America, the First Avenger.
Wow.
I fucking love this film, and I know I'm the only guy on the planet who
does. No, people love this movie, but not the way they love every other Captain America subsequent film.
It's, I guess, I've always said
except Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Well, that's totally not counted, right? But all the Chris Evans, I told you this all the time. I say the Captain America trilogy is the best pound for pound value for money in the whole MCU. Better than fucking Iron Man, better than Thor.
Better than Spider-Man now?
Ooh, tough one. It's a tough one, isn't it? Yeah. Ooh.
Demented and sad, but social.
Spider-Man might have...
I know, you know close, what? Isn't it?
I think it is better because The Winter Soldier is the fucking perfect film.
No, it's not.
Oh, it's the a Soldier, perfect sorry. Film, right?
I'd say Far From Home is a worse film, I think, than First Avenger. So that gets it over the line.
Yeah, I think it's still. I know it's agree.
One and two. But
yeah, yeah, yeah. No. Captain America is still the best. And you know what? This movie gives the MCU a genuinely great war film. Because, you know, they do the thing where they do the martial arts film. And then they do the fucking magic film. They're about to do the maybe horror film.
Genuinely great.
Genuinely great.
Sounds okay.
Genuinely great. It gets overlooked a lot because there's... What's cool about it is that the whole, like, half of the movie, right, is Chris Evans. Well, Captain America, right? Getting dodged and fucked on by the government. They're making him dress up in this bitch outfit and go, hey, everyone, and do fucking this. And he's just... You see it wearing upon him. And then he just becomes a hero because he's like, fuck this.
Yeah, and then back to TLJ.
TLJ is also cool in it. But we're saying it's their best movie, you know what I mean? So TLJ is like the grizzled sort of, yeah, of course, again, yeah, sergeant.
I guess he was N, wasn't he? He was N, Tommy Lee Jones.
No, he's a sergeant. He's just sitting there. He's the guy who interrogated that motherfucker with the glasses and shit. With
saying he didn't have a prominent role. I'm just saying like it was...
Oh, this is one
of
his
Chris Evans and Hayley Atwell and Hugo Weaving and Tommy Lee Jones.
He's got the N credit. There you go. So, yes. Yeah, but anyway, I will always love this film and this trilogy, Word to Big Bird.
Yeah, I think he was good in it. I don't think this is better than the other 10 films on this list.
Oh, no one does. No one will think that. No one will agree with me.
All right, well, we're moving away finally from Tommy Lee Jones, who is dominating proceedings thus far, with my number 8, which is a film starring Tom Hanks.
Mm.
And our preferred winner of this, from director Paul Greengrass, 2013, it's Captain Phillips.
Ah, yes. The one that I haven't seen.
You haven't seen this one.
I really got to see it.
Yeah, man. You got to watch this movie. And it's primarily for Hanks' performance. If I was ranking films based on performance alone, not the film overall, this would be so much higher on my list. And there'd be a couple of ones that didn't make my list that would climb in as well. But because we sort of talked about it and always have talked about it as a film, not the performance alone.
Yeah, no, it's the film. Yeah.
Then it's down here at number 8. It follows the true story of Captain Richard Phillips and the 2009 hijacking by Somali pirates of the US-flagged MV Maersk, Alabama. And it was the first American cargo ship to be hijacked in 200 years.
Really?
And this dude, so he's a normal guy who's probably in his mid-50s, Tom Hanks in this particular film, no, Richard Phillips, and the lengths he goes to protect his crew when dudes are sticking guns in his face and how far this film goes. And it's very, very good all the way up until the last, I want to say, 10 minutes of the movie.
Something happens?
The last 10 minutes of the movie, without giving it away, there's an acting tour de force from Tom Hanks, which is arguably one of the greatest moments of acting ever put to film that I can think of.
Whoa.
I know I'm not the best judge of acting.
No, go on, yeah.
I'm the first to admit it. I'm more a story guy. Mm. I'm more an overall sort of aesthetic kind of guy.
Still.
But that moment made me tear up.
Really? Paul doesn't actually know how to cry, everyone. It's never happened.
You animal.
That's actually pretty high praise.
So that's why
I do have to get along
Captain
to this.
Films on my list at number 8.
Fair enough. My number 7 is also a true story and also has T to the Hanks. It's Catch Me If You Can.
Yes, of course. It's not on my list because I don't...
No, you don't rate this show at all. But it is based on a true story. Follows the exploits of Frank Abagnale Jr., who recently gave a Google talk, which you should look up online. It's very interesting about like all the shit. He posed as a pilot, doctor, lawyer, racked up millions of dollars in counterfeit checks all before his 19th birthday. This is his film, and it's played by Leo DiCaprio. Okay, I think it's flighty. I think it's sexy. I think it's an incredibly fun caper. But it is also one of Spielberg's most complex and personal chronicles of like a father's son type thing, because this whole film, Frank Abagnale, you'd think that he was driven by the money or the excitement or the, he's actually driven because he just wants his family back. And that's the whole film. Leo DiCaprio is doing all this shit to try and get Christopher Walken and his mom back together.
Walken!
Yeah, and that's like, even all the things that he does are sort of like family based and so on. He just wants to live the American dream. He's hanging out with Amy Adams. He sees her parents just dancing by themselves in the living room, and you can just see on his face that that's what I want. So that's why he keeps going. It's a really cool film. And
how does Hanks figure in?
Oh. Again, we're doing the film.
I know, but it'd be nice if you talked a little bit about Hanks.
Fine. You know what Hanks is good at with this shit? I've told you about the joke that you don't laugh at, where he's like, everyone keeps giving him shit as an FBI agent. Hey, you're really square, Frank. Or whatever his name is. And he's...
It'd be weird to have two Franks.
Yeah, it'd be weird to have two Franks. What's his name? Carl.
It'd be overly Frank.
It's Carl.
And Ernest.
And he goes, you want to hear a joke? Yeah, I want to. Okay, ready? Knock, knock. And they're like, who's there? And he goes, go fuck yourself. And that's the way his mouth is when he says it. It's like, I pissed my pants in the cinema. All right? And that shit is all good, but him being the actual guy who chases after him and then becomes friends with Frank Abagnale later on. They're friends now in real life.
That's pretty cool.
That shit is cool, man. So, you know, there you go.
All right.
Catch me if you can.
Prepare yourself for the volley volley back to you. My number seven is where Warrior fell for me. So Hardy, he already had to say what I had to say about it.
Well, my number six is The Revenant. So we're going with Tom Hardy.
Very
now.
Close. Very close.
I'm really?
Yeah, slightly low.
Okay. So this Revenant-ass film is basically one of your... I would say the aesthetic arrest on this film is more memorable to me than a lot of other films. Just seeing the expanse of the way he shoots it and everything is just amazing. But however, the movie itself is about... it's a real story of Hugh Glass, who sustains... He's an 1823 frontiersman, and he gets attacked by a bear and fucks shit up on him. But one of his hunting team, Tom Hardy, kills his young son, leaves him for dead. So basically, this is the story of Glass utilizing his survival skills to find a way back to civilization while he's almost dying. And he's just fueled by vengeance and then goes to try and track this other motherfucker and kill him. Sounds simple, isn't
it? Well, I think it's a great choice because we know DiCaprio won the Best Actor. Mm. Some people say unfairly he shouldn't have won it.
But he should definitely have won it, man.
I think it was great in this film. That said, it's his body of work. Probably got him over the line, I will acknowledge.
Sure, but we actually walked out of that cinema saying, I give him his fucking actor.
He was fucking awesome. Tom Hardy, brilliant as the antagonist who incites this
really want to kill that motherfucker.
Roth is, yeah, you want him dead. You want him dead so much. He's so disgusting and despicable and awful. Can't believe how good this movie was. It was one of the first films we saw that particular year. I think I said to you as we walked out, already found my film of the year.
Yeah, man.
And you laughed at me. And it was beyond that, you know, Inarritu, beautiful, beautiful film. So well shot. Just
that is what pushes it. Because let's face it, without that directorship and that's kind of whatever it's done, this story on a film would be, oh, I guess it's okay. But that the treatment of it is what made it awesome. Because Leo's performance is like internalized. He's got two enemies. He's got one guy that killed his son and the other is the land and its elements and shit. And he has to fight both. Very compelling.
100%. All right, Wayne, number five. Sorry, six, Wayne. Then is a film which I expect to come slightly higher on your list. Road to Perdition.
Way higher.
Ooh! Tom Hanks here for me.
Oh, yes, buddy.
Five more points for Hanks then in our scoring scale. I'll give you the update after this. This movie, directed by Sam Mendes, is just, I think, one of the most underrated and just coolest films.
It really, really is, man. This is so fucking cool. And the thing is, right, because it's about, Mike Sullivan, who's Tom Hanks, is this enforcer for this powerful Depression area sort of Midwestern mobster, Paul Newman. And his son is Daniel Craig, is James Bond, man. And he's
Paul Newman's son, not Tom Hanks.
Sorry, Paul Hunt's son, yes. And he's jealous of the close bond that, you know, like Paul Newman and Tom Hanks' characters share. So he uses it as an incident to actually just murder Tom Hanks' wife and his youngest son. Fucking harsh, okay? Then this story is Tom Hanks and his remaining son being forced to flee because the mob has to hunt him down and Tom Hanks is just going to take all their money, fuck it all up, and try and save his son from actually becoming like him, becoming a gangster. He's like, you know, this is it. Like, I can't let him kill anyone or anything like that. So, amazing film. Amazing film. And Jude Law... What the fuck? That motherfucker creeped
antagonist.
Me out.
Yeah,
he creeped me out.
He really did ugly himself up for this. But I think just...
Did he ever?
I know it might look like on the surface Hanks isn't doing much in his role because he's very, as you might expect, very stoic figure. Is it the 30s? If not, certainly by the 40s.
Yeah, 20s, 30s, yeah.
He's somewhere around that era. And he's a contract killer. He's not going to be the most personable, likable kind of guy. But when his family threatened and he goes into full bear mode, brilliant. And then afterwards, how he softens through the course of the film towards his son. That is what elevates this film to here for me.
Which you could argue is ultimately what does him in. Do you know what I mean?
It absolutely does. But yeah, the brilliant casting here is, I'm not sure there are many actors at this particular point in Hanks's age range who could have done this in 2002 and sold it. Go from being hardcore killer to somewhat vulnerable father.
Yeah. Absolutely. A couple of scenes in this that fucking rock is the first one where there's like kids peeking through, you know, and he's basically looking from underneath between Tom Hanks's feet at some scene, at something that's going through, and Daniel Craig kills a guy and Tom Hanks has to take out all three of his bodyguards before anything happens. And all you see is bang, this happens. The rat-a-tat of his fucking like Tommy gun, and just the case is falling between his legs and all three guys just falling. I'm like, fuck, that was good, right? And that's what was cool. He's supposed to be an artist with a Tommy gun, and at the end, bam, bam, he just takes out everyone with one clip. Like, this is the shit. And that's supposed to be a fucking, like, you know, drama. No way, man. It's
pretty
way
film.
Too cool.
Pretty film. All right. Let's do a score update. Here we are. All halfway right. mark of the countdown. Remembering we're doing inverse scoring. In third spot, Tommy Lee Jones has 8 points. In second spot, Tom Hardy has 10 points. And in first spot, as the crow flies. No, what does that mean? Right now.
As you may expect.
12 points for Hanks.
Yep.
So our
yep.
favorite preferred actor is now in the lead. Let's see how this shakes up as we progress through the top half of the list. Wayne, you're number five.
Okay, so you're going to be mad at my number five, as mad as Max is himself.
Damn it.
Mad Max Fury Road is my number five.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. No. No.
So this is
no.
This is the thing that was going to get no. the fucking, like, Tom Hardy maybe up on that board. You know what I'm saying? So Mad Max Fury Road. Now, Paul, of course, loves this film being more than life itself.
well, so that's true.
But then, and I went, I think I saw it with you, didn't I? Or did I?
Yeah,
I did, yeah.
We saw it with our respective partners at that time, walked out. How was that? Like, oh, just it was stupid, the shitty grin in my face.
I know, it was fucking balls good. In much the same way that I was really impressed with the visuals in fucking The Revenant, this is on a similar scale, but it's in the desert. So the
beautiful film.
Yeah, the things that I saw, particularly the sandstorm, is the thing that sticks out in my head. I was looking at it, just mouth dropped. I was like, what the fuck? This is amazing. Like, and so there's that cool shit. What was probably cooler about it as well for me is that being from Australia, and it's a very Aussie story, Mad Max.
Despite being played by
Tunisia or whatever, where they
Tom Hardy, yeah, filmed in South Africa.
Is it George Miller? No, yeah, George Miller. Yeah, his treatment of the material, particularly the guy with the fucking electric guitar, it was really Aussie. It felt kind of Aussie, but not Aussie to me, and it was really interesting as an experience. So not to mention, it was a good film anyway. What do you think? You must
brilliant film. Can't speak enough about it. In fact, I'm not going to do it now. I'm just going to say, go over to We Watch the Thing, B Dizzle's show, where we broke it down. B Dizzle infamously didn't like it the first time he watched it. Just listen to hear what he has to say.
Really?
When I'm in his ear on a recent episode of that particular show.
Oh, you turned him.
Brilliant show. No, I didn't. He turned himself.
You Jedi'd him. Yeah.
I turned himself, but maybe the threat of having to deal with me if he didn't like it.
That would do it.
All right. So that's that one. My number five is Here's Where I Had the Revenant, just slightly higher
good.
Than you. So there's another Hardy one here. Hardy making all the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. He's back.
And now taking a very strong lead into this one.
Tommy was never in the...
Tommy. Lee Jones was never in the running.
No,
it was a two-horse race. Wayne, what is your number four?
My number four is Forrest Gump, son. Forrest Gump. Woo-hoo-hoo. So...
Fucking
that's right,
hell.
Brand. Okay, so everyone... I mean, everyone knows Forrest Gump,
I
right?
I wouldn't shit on Forrest Gump if he asked me.
Paul's got issues with Forrest Gump because I guess he doesn't have a heart. Now, Forrest Gump is, of course... He's never thought of himself as disadvantaged, but thanks to his supportive mother, Sally Field, he leads anything but a restricted life. He's like, he gets this, you know, gridiron as a college football star, fights in Vietnam, fucking captains a shrimp boat, becomes a damn, like, millionaire
blah,
or whatever.
Blah, blah, bloody fucking blah.
People, this is the ultimate underdog story. Here you have this simple-minded character born with an inescapable handicap of sorts, but of course, it's the story of how a person who is perhaps behind the eight ball in life can still make it all the way to the end just by being a personable, nice guy. This is the dumbest
fuck
shit
you.
Anyone ever
an
said
asshole.
In
you're
the history
asshole.
Of, and I don't
it's
think I'm exaggerating here.
Fuck.
Time! Fuck off. All right. And also a story of Americana, if you ask me. This shit is heartwarming. I can't believe Paul doesn't like it. What don't you like about it, Paul?
Everything.
You're a biatch.
I think I hate how contrived it is. I hate how ridiculous it is. I particularly hate the relationship between he and Robin Wright Penn, and I just...
Look, I will admit to you that she's a whore. Okay? Because she that's not like Chris Rock said that little monologue. She's like, she basically goes away, she fucks him, comes back to him after she got AIDS,
yep.
right? Which I didn't even know, right, in the film.
What?
I didn't know she had AIDS in particular. I mean, she was sick, right? And then, like, you know, just to take care of his kid, which she says is his.
Yep.
Right?
Do we have any guarantees?
We do not. And the kid's ball sack smart as well, so it's kind of almost unlikely, right? So... And then it's like, well, did she give him AIDS? And Chris Rock's like, I didn't see a sequel. So so yes, that's there. But that is the type of thing that would happen in life because that happens to even most people. Most guys get fucked up like that.
Oh, wow. There we are. All right, that's Wayne's number four. There is no account. Look, I realize that most people like Hanks in this particular role. I love this particular film. It was an Academy Award winner, of course. My number four is also Hanks.
Yay! Oh, shit.
And of course, Toy Story.
Oh, shit. Not even near.
Go!
It's animated. It's not the same thing. It's
he's
very nice.
He's a focal performance.
Nice.
Fucking hell.
It's fine.
How dare thee?
Look, I do love Toy Story, but I don't... Actually, you know what? I like and admire Toy Story. I don't love it like you do.
Come on. Think of... There's two, obviously, major performances here. It's Tim Allen's never done anything better. Tom Hanks has done something better.
Mm.
But this is right up there for me. This is one of the most influential movies ever made. It's a pop cultural phenomenon. It puts CG, or computer-generated films, on the map to where they could be.
I agree.
What a movie. What a performance. Like, you are a... Come on.
No, it was brilliant.
There's a snake in my boots. Obviously, I'm not doing it justice. I realize
this. You won't hear a word of dismissal from me because it is brilliant and I did like it so much. I loved it. I loved it at the time, but it's just not in my memory. I'll tell you what the biggest fucking achievement this franchise has done is over however many years, the four movies, it didn't drop the ball once. All right, like that number four was fucking king dick.
Arguably, this is the greatest quadrilogy of all time.
Yeah, I would actually agree with that because you can't pick a hole in either of them. I think some people don't like, is it three? Which is no, because two some people think is better than one. Right?
Including me for a long time.
Yeah? Which is
I find two and one interchangeable in the same way I find Last Crusade and Raiders of the Lost Ark interchangeable.
Interesting.
On the right day, I can think of one or the other.
Which is the one where at the end, Andy gave away, he's a grown up, and he gives away his toys to this new kid. Three, right? That fucking broke me, man. That broke me the fuck up. That was amazing. So yeah, you're right. It's pretty awesome. But again, I still don't love it like you do.
The update?
Yeah.
Then with those revelations at number four is obviously LJ still on eight. Hardy is on 22. Hanks is out now in the lead on 26 points.
It's not as fucking close as I was thinking. I mean, sorry, it's pretty close.
Closer. All right, well, over to you then for your number three.
All right, well, I was going to put this at number seven just to piss everyone off, but it's Saving Private Ryan. What? What? Okay,
I guess I'm happy it's risen from seven to three.
It was a gag at the time, okay? I mean, it was just like, we know this. Anyway, Saving Private Ryan. I don't even know if I need to say anything else about this other than no one doesn't know this film if you're listening to this show. No one wasn't affected by that first scene and in many scenes, right? That first scene I still can't now watch. I think I've seen it three times and I saw it three times to try and dull myself to it. It's just so heartbreakingly horrible. And someone actually told me before I saw it, it was got a gory beginning. I'm like, really? I was like, oh, it's not gory. It's fucking depressing. It's just like, it just flattens your whole face. it does. I'm just sitting there going, oh my God, look at this. Then the movie then goes on. And because it's Spielberg, because it's high quality, because it's awesome, it does actually capture your attention all the way through. And it is this, Matt Damon, perfectly cast. I remember hearing that Steven Spielberg was considering him for the role when he saw Courage Under Fire. And then he thought, nah, he's too skinny. And then he met him and had actually beefcaked up a bit more. So, okay, now he's good. And that's how he got
it. Now he's all good.
Yeah. So, like, just cool shit like that. But every performance in this is golden, man. Even Barry Pepper.
Barry Pepper was good.
Barry's good. I'm not fucking
with him. You should have said there was even Vin Diesel.
Shit, I forgot Vin Diesel was in this. But then again, I do that. Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, Vin Diesel was good in Boiling.
A little girl and try to get back to a family and get shot for it.
See, that's what a good director will do for you.
All of them are great. Awesome. Hanks as the kind of, or he's the leader of the team.
He is.
And he holds them all together and he's got that secret about his past, what he actually does. They've all got bets on it.
Yeah.
I watched this recently on ultra high def again. Oh my God, it holds up.
Really?
It's one of the greatest movies of all time.
Yeah.
And Hanks' performance in it is stellar, which it elevates it as well. Everybody, like you said, is good in this movie. The deaths resonate, all of them. The question of, is one man's life worth what we're going through, resonates through this entire film and will haunt you afterwards.
Absolutely.
This is filmmaking at its absolute finest. There has been no better battle scenes at the front and back end to depict World War II. And there was a walk-up for where it falls on my list.
Obviously. Speaking of those battle scenes, I was reading this interview with, who's the guy in Fabulous Baker Boys?
Yeah, Ed Burns.
Ed Burns, all right? So he's in that opening battle scene, and apparently Steven Spielberg goes, action, right? And the whole movie had to do was basically hand a grenade to Tom Sizemore so he could throw it. The scene starts, and he just kind of doesn't look, and he just drops the grenade, and they ruin the shot, basically. Tom sort of, and then Steven Spielberg said he boomed up to him on the chair, which is on the stilts, right. on the crane, and goes, hey, Ed, listen, so that shot just cost us $300,000, so maybe why don't you keep it on the ball this time? Right? You imagine hearing that from fucking Steven Spielberg? I'm like,
Spielberg, yeah.
I would shit my pants, right? And so, but shit love like that, it, you know? It. It's amazing. And they give you the ending first in this film.
In a way. Although it doesn't become clear until the end what
well,
that means.
Well, oh yeah, I suppose you're right.
In fact, okay. I found that to be an absolute shock the first time I watched it.
Well, because it means nothing when the guy, when the old man says was, to that, you know,
we're going to spoil a film that's more than 20 years old. I just assumed it was Tom Hanks's character because we go from the vision of him in current day to the vision of Tom Hanks on the boat coming
in. Suckering, yeah.
Completely suckered you in.
Really cool. That's good shit. That's good shit. You're right. It's a great film, but I like two more.
Fair enough. Well, let's hear what the second one of those is.
Is this, what number was you? Is it you?
That's number two now, right? Oh, no, I have number three.
Yeah.
Sorry, my number three is Inception.
Fucking low.
The turnabout is fair play. Tom Hardy here. I guess arguably we're pushing the top three and then the end.
Yeah, there's a bit of a flip here that could happen.
But he is a critical player in this particular
film. Tom Hardy is a major part of the fucking... Yeah,
this is more an ensemble, obviously, after Leonardo DiCaprio. Everybody else is a bit of an ensemble, I find,
yes,
in this movie.
Yes, he's so definitely the lead.
Not fair to say, you know, Ken Watanabe or Ellen Page or anybody else. Oh, sorry, Elliot Page. They are all as much of a film, I think, as the rest of them, other than Leo, whose film this is.
Agreed.
But Tom Hardy is suave. Now, this is the thing and why...
Oh, that motherfucker's cool.
This film is amazing and I love it. And I used to give it 4.5 stars and I upped it to 5 stars after a watch probably 18 months ago with an apologies to Christopher Nolan. So I think this film is the definitive heist film of all time.
Definitely.
It's brilliant. It's very intelligent, but it's not incomprehensible, which some people say Tenet is, yourself included.
Yes.
And it doesn't work. I think this is peak Nolan.
He'll never do a movie as good as this.
I don't think so.
I don't know if anyone.
Well, not anyone. It's not my favorite film of all time. But it's absolutely my top 15 favorite films of all time.
Inception is
incredible.
Pure class. And you know what? I mean, we all. Everyone listening knows about Inception. But here's some fun about it. Apparently, Christopher Nolan toyed with the idea of making it a horror movie. Paul, can you imagine that?
I can, and I think it would work really well. But I think it's a better option.
Yeah, absolutely. He did so. And you know how we heard this rumor that Christopher Nolan like issues and hates 3D, and that's why he's never shot a movie in 3D? Apparently, he considered filming Inception in 3D. And he said eventually, though, he determined that it would be too restricted by the technology. Then after filming, they almost converted the movie to 3D in post, but there wasn't enough time, so they just didn't do it. So that's why. So he's not as off the idea as I thought he was, but thankfully, you know, it's not a thing anymore, so there you are.
Yeah.
So it's just like cool shit like that about the film.
Hardy with a hard run at the end here to win this battle. Wayne, what is your number two?
My number two is Road to Perdition.
Oh!
Yeah, see, because it got interesting there for a second.
Damn.
Yeah, but see.
I haven't done the math yet.
I know.
Okay, you've already talked about Road to Perdition. We have. All right, wow, that's high up in your list. So, as I reveal my number two to be... Tom Hardy in Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, yeah.
Which, for all the reasons we've discussed, I just think he's a good Mad Max, but...
He's a good Mad Max.
This is the film overall. It's one of my favorites of all time. I don't think his performance in that film is as good as my number one's performance.
Mm. It's not his movie anyway. It's the
girl's
movie.
Yeah, which helps sort out. It is also Charlize Theron.
Absolutely.
Hugely owning that particular film. So, as we come into our number ones, Tom Hanks has 43 points. Hardy has 39. Tommy Lee Jones... distant third to 8 points.
Oh, shit.
So let's see, Wayne. Ooh. What is your number one film?
My number one? Do we do the
Inception.
Right? Yeah, it's Inception.
Yeah, it's Inception. Oh, my God!
Oh, shit. That means...
Wayne, give us your 10 through one so I can double check my maths as well.
10, Warrior. 8, Captain America. 7, Catch Me If You Can. 6, The Revenant. 5 is Mad Max Fury Road. 4, Forrest Gump. 3, Saving Private Ryan. 2, Road to Perdition. And 1, Inception.
So, just to clarify here, Wayne's gone Hardy, Lee Jones, Hanks, Hardy, Hanks, and Tom Hardy at number 1.
I didn't think it would... Okay, keep going.
So that means Hardy has moved to the lead with 49 points. Over Tom Hanks's 43.
Oh no, you're deciding this.
I am deciding this.
Go on.
If you're playing at home, you've worked this out. Now, we already obviously spoke about Inception. Anything else you want to say about it?
Nope.
All right, here we are then. My review of my list. Number 10, Tommy Lee Jones in Men in Black. 9, Tommy Lee Jones in No Country for Old Men. 8, Tom Hanks in Captain Phillips. 7, Tom Hardy in Warrior. 6, Tom Hanks in Road to Perdition. 5, Tom Hardy in The Revenant. 4, Tom Hanks in Toy Story. 3, Hardy in Inception. 2, Hardy in Mad Max Fury Road. And for the win, Tom Hanks is Saving Private Ryan.
Okay, so you brought him over the edge there. Fantastic.
No, actually, you brought him over the edge because I did the maths on my list and Hardy won. So
really?
It was you who had Hanks, and Hardy last.
there in the reverse scoring that gets it over the line.
Well,
congratulations. Tom Hanks is the top Tom.
Top Tom.
We have decreed this. Tom Hardy, Tommy Lee Jones, thank you for your service. Tom Hanks, please continue with your beautiful, beautiful ways for the rest of eternity.
Sorry, Australia gave you COVID.
That too, although he's bounced back because he's Tom Hanks.
He's Tom Hanks, exactly.
He couldn't be top Tom if he was
dead.
He
just acted his way into hell.
Already mentioned everything I need to say about Saving Private Ryan. They are our list. What about yours? Let's wrap it up with, oh, any honorable mentions?
Okay, you'll laugh at this. Under Siege.
Yeah, fair enough.
Dragnet. Bonfire of the Vanities. Men in Black.
Wow.
I like fucking Rock and Roller, and I like Black Hawk Down. Word.
Well, he wasn't very much in Black Hawk Down.
I know, so I couldn't let it go.
He couldn't qualify. The Fugitive for me, as mentioned, the honorable mention, and Castaway from Tom Hanks.
Oh, yeah, good call. Right, that was a good fucking movie.
Right up there. It was a bit sad to leave that one off the list. All right. Without any further ado then, what did you have to say about who was the best of the Toms in a segment that we call the Pop 10?
Talk about. Pop 10. Talk about.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with Joe Ketchum from Wordstar Productions. Apollo 13, Mad Max Fury Road, and No Country for Old Men.
Apollo 13, nice call.
Neither of us mentioned it. That is a little bit of a shock. Hendo Henderson from the IMDb Journey podcast said, fittingly, I have one for each in my top three. Number three, No Country for Old Men. Number two, Saving Private Ryan. Number one, Inception. Rob Walters said, in order, because everyone gets one, Lee Jones for the Fugitive at number three. Two, Hardy, Inception. One, Hanks, Catch Me If You Can.
Oh, number one. Hot. Nice one, brother.
Damn. Lee Allen Thomas said, Apollo 13 at three. Forrest Gump, yes, Forrest Gump, deal with it. That's obviously aimed at me.
Damn right.
Number one, Inception. Sorry, Tommy Lee Jones.
I'm sure he's very happy.
Jonathan Kidd said, Hardy and Bronson. Okay, yeah, something different. Jones, Tommy Lee in The Fugitive. And number one, Hanks in Saving Private Ryan. Yes. Jason Barr said, Hardy in Mad Max, colon, Fury Road. Hanks in Castaway and Tommy Lee Jones in Under Siege. Just for his white Jimi Hendrix impression, field performance alone. Hashtag fuck Seagal.
Yeah.
Very, very nice. John Huslander said, Hardy in Fury Road. Yes. Hanks, Wanneroos' number seven choice. You know it.
There you go. Nice
still
one.
Resonates no, Saving Private Ryan to this day. And Tommy Lee Jones in No Country for Old Men. That's because MIB 2 had the same effect as a little flashy thing, I guess, on MIB.
Oh, yeah. I had two.
Laurie Miller had Hanks, Road to Perdition. Nice. Tommy Lee Jones in The Fugitive and just Hardy in The Revenant. David Powell, top level patron to the show, moderator of the Facebook list community, said all Hardy, top three are easy. The Revenant, Mad Max Fury Road, and Inception. Damn, that's some Hardy love.
That's Hardy love right there.
Josh Ragland, the creator of the Countdown podcast's Scavenger Hunt on Letterboxd, said Hanks in The Burbs. Ooh, first mention of that.
Fuck, I love The Burbs. Should have put that one on.
Number two, Hanks in Catch Me If You Can. Number one, Hanks in Saving Private Ryan. It's a Hanks fest.
It is a Hank up.
Chris Uni, another high-level page of the show, said Warrior at number three, Cobb at number two.
What's that?
I think it's Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
Number one, Philadelphia. First mentioned that one for Tommy Hanks.
Yeah, that was a good show too.
And then last two, I should say, of course, Ashley Gorski from the Rabbit Ears TV podcast. Wayne, you were on this week, I believe.
Yes, everyone. Swing by the Rabbit Ears podcast. If you want to hear me and Ashley talking up Dawson's Crack, boom, boom, and that shit is fucking us just talking, fanning out, talking, me being a bitch, of course.
Is it just you going?
You know what? I actually played the guitar on her show.
Wow. Won't do it here. We'll do it for ladies.
No, it was just
ladies, if you're a lady podcaster.
It was in the middle of the, you know what? I got an extra here. And I just played a couple of bars and it was funny because it was about the conversation.
Sure.
So yeah, anyway, if you want to hear it, Ashley, the Rabbit Ears podcast, give it a look. It's out now.
Number one, Warrior, Hardy. Number two, Toy Story, Hanks. Number three, Catch Me If You Can, Hanks. Number four through eight are likely all Tom Hanks movies, to be honest.
Fair enough.
And then the man himself who created this week's topic, Adam Allure. Thank you again so much for your support at the top level, patron of the show. His top 10, number 10, Men in Black. Obviously, Tommy Lee Jones. 9, The Burbs, Hanks. 8, The Revenant, Hardy. 7, The Dark Knight Rises, Tom Hardy.
Yeah, see, I couldn't put The Rises on any of my lists. I just couldn't get there.
Toy Story at number 6 for Tom Hanks. Number 5, Captain Phillips. Tom Hanks again. Number 4, Mad Max Fury Road for Hardy. 3, Saving Private Ryan for Hanks. Number 2, Forrest Gump for Hanks.
Sounds like he hanked up. That's a hanky list,
number
right?
Number 1, Inception for Tom Hardy. But I do believe on the math alone, just glancing at this, let's see, 9, 17, 22. Yeah, Hanks wins. Also for good Adam to know. Good Malua. To know. So thank you so much for everybody who got back to us with your feedback on the topic at hand. We really greatly, truly do appreciate it. Wayne, how do people do that? Let us know what they think about the topics at hand and to give their feedback on those topics.
If you Alta Vista the Countdown podcast or whatever. Yes, the Countdown Podcast. Search for us, you'll find our socials, or you can send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at the Countdown PC. You can like and follow the show through Podbean, where we host. Do check us out and give the show a follow, as mentioned already. And the Facebook list community links in the show notes. All right, Wayne, what's happening next week for episode 354 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews? You can vamp or look for it, or I can just tell you.
Oh, yeah.
How about I throw it to myself? Paul, what's happening next week? Okay, I'll tell you what's happening next week, Paul. It is the worst 10 films of 2021. One of the three big shows of the year. One of the very, very worst films that we sat through in this COVID-affected year. It's going to be an absolute shitfest, and hopefully a lot of name-calling and a lot of calling out. So what should you avoid / come and, you know, just feel better at the fact we call out a film which you feel bad for having sat through.
Or be shocked at a film that you thought was gangster, but then Paul hated it because it's Paul.
I'll explain.
Hey, in small
words, you don't know. To understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
All my films are ass, which you like to eat, so we'll just find out.
Sure.
That is it for us today. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
What have I done to deserve this bullshit? That should be next thing's one.
The 2021 in a nutshell, right there in a soundbite. We will catch you next time.
See you.